From multiple scalable locations in Minneapolis or near enough, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development. I'm Ellen Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
I'm Martha Croy. I too make nice games.
In this episode, we talk with Seth Fulkerson, director of Arzette, the Jewel of Faramore, to discuss Game Maker! Beep, 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 beep. And so, if everyone is ready and you're hyped, let's start.
Must we be both? I mean, that's an academic question because we are.
I said beep, 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 beep. I said beep, beep.
I'm pretty good. Right, that's right.
Well, this is another in our, I guess, unofficial series of, hey, let's talk about a game engine with a guest who knows about it. Because sometimes you need that to expand your worldview and your understanding. And so I'm thrilled. I'm really thrilled because Game Maker is something I've like toyed with, but I haven't really, you know, I forget it all right away. Steven, you've done work in Game Maker.
I have, yes. And I felt like I knew a lot more about it when I first started out, because that's kind of how things work. You know, you spend a couple months on a thing, you're like, I'm an expert now. And then you spend another few months on it, you're like, oh no, I definitely don't know what I'm doing. So I'm looking forward to hearing some expert opinions on how Game Maker actually works.
But maybe before we dive into all of our burning questions, let's ask Seth to introduce himself a little bit. Tell us about your work and maybe a little bit about the game you're working on.
Sure, yeah. I'm Seth Fulkerson. I'm the director of Arzette, the Jewel of Faramore. I also did programming, design work, project management, a bunch of other things. Before that, I was a hobbyist developer. Arzette's my first commercially shipped game. And I did all of the console porting myself. Quite an experience. I'm super excited, super jazzed to talk about it.
Cool. Immediately when you said you did all the porting yourself, I immediately became curious about how like Game Maker specifically handles that. I think we're jumping like way into the deep end. I'm really curious like how you manage that. Because in Unity, they make it kind of, I'm primarily a Unity developer, and they make it fairly easy. But I had a little bit of experience with Game Maker, and it seemed like it was, at the very least, more pricier to do it. But I'm curious, like, your experience with that.
Yeah, they definitely made it a little easier, I would say, to do than Unity.
Okay. Oh.
I have a light... I've light experience in doing Unity and console stuff in Unity, not for very long though. Game Maker is definitely just like every other game engine. It's certainly not a press button to export to console. You've got to do some work.
Yeah,
but I would say the work for it, they do a really good job with their documentation and really answering like things that you need to know. It's more straightforward than you would think, but I will talk more in detail about that later, like you said.
Yeah, that's fair. I probably shouldn't have started with that question, but I was excited.
No worries.
So, okay. So here, maybe more introductory level question. Like, why did you decide to use Game Maker?
So really it's familiarity. I am a Game Maker old head, as in, I started using it when I was 12, when it was Game Maker 7, way, way before, I don't want to say it was a real game engine, but back when it really wasn't like oriented.
You're not saying that.
When it wasn't oriented towards like business use and, you know, having like console exports and stuff like that.
Sure.
So it's a lot of it is familiarity. You know, obviously I didn't ship the game with the drag and drop functionality, but like a lot of other people, that's where I started. Because Game Maker has like a lot of those like, or click and play, like those early engines had like the, you know, very drag and drop, like GUI oriented, like code blocks that you can do just to really get your feet wet. But yeah, I mean, that's how I started. That's how a bunch of people started. And then you just sort of slowly move over to learning GML, which is Game Maker's built-in language, sort of like how Godot has its own built-in language. It's sort of like C#, but way, way easier. Way, 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 way easier. It's not really similar. Yeah, there's nothing that it's really like, but it's a very easy to learn, simple programming language that
sure
uses. But yeah, it's mostly familiarity, and just for the project itself, RZ's a 2D action platformer. It's actually a spiritual successor to both the CD-ROM era of games of the early 90s and also, like, specifically those terrible Zelda CDI games that nobody likes,
yeah,
except, like, me and a bunch of other weirdos that made a, a spiritual successor to them. yeah, it's familiarity. It was the right engine for the project. One interesting challenge was, early on, I realized that due to the nature of the game, like honoring the FMV kind of CD-ROM era, it needed lots of video playback support.
Yeah.
And that's something that when I started using Game Maker, like started scoping the project out, it didn't support video playback. Not really. Yeah. It did for certain console SKUs, but not across the board. So that was, yeah, that was a lot, yeah. But thankfully it ended up okay. But yeah, like I was a hobbyist developer for a very long time. I made terrible games that nobody needs to see, game jam stuff.
Gotta start somewhere.
But I'd say that the thing that I probably was best known for were the fan-made Zelda CDI remasters I released in 2020. They were like from the ground up remakes made in Game Maker. And that was, I've told the story many, many times, but it was both a very stubborn joke and also, as a creative person, a way to finish a project. Even if it was a silly project, it was a way to actually, like, finish and, you know, ship something, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, on top of that, you ended up with a template for your next project.
Exactly.
What was that actually? Was that part of the plan? Yeah. Or is that something you realized halfway through? Or
so I am very lucky that a lot of my good friends on the internet and otherwise are professional artists and animators. And even before I made those remasters of those games, we sort of always kicked around the idea of doing something like that, because just to draw on our strengths and take advantage of all of our respective like knowledges, and it's a fun idea for a game, and it was a very fun game to make, especially after the reception of those games and having that confidence of finishing a project, it really was just like sort of the driving force to be like, okay, I can do this, right? So that's sort of like the genesis of where the project started.
I want to spin real quick and just put a pin in, or put a flag in, what you said right at the beginning when you answered Steven's question, which is familiarity. Because I think I've done this where I'm starting to design a project and I'm starting to think about what workflows I'm going to need. How's this going to be? Because like, you don't want to be like locked into what you know, because that can limit your whatever, right? Like that's a natural impulse. And that's not bad thinking. But I think it is important. And just the way you described it is like, sometimes just use what you know, because your goal wasn't necessarily to like make, you know, the most optimized version of this thing technically necessary, like make all the right technical choices. It was just the important thing is make all the right design choices for a game developer. And so, like you said, your goal was to get something done. Sometimes maybe not learning the shiny new thing, or not getting on the upgrade path, or sticking with what you know, even though it's falling out of favor, or it's you know, or whatever. Or in this case, just something that's also a very viable alternative. I'm speaking worst case scenario. This is still good advice. Sometimes just use what you got. Which isn't to say don't be inspired to learn something new, because I'm also in that camp. But I like hearing you say that, because you're like, that's what I knew, you know. I'm like, yeah, you really don't need more of an excuse than that. I like it.
So knowing that about Game Maker, I guess, what would you say would be some advantages or disadvantages using Game Maker? You had brought up that like video processing or putting video in your game wasn't possible at the time. So that's obviously an example of a disadvantage. But are there other kinds of things that you felt you had to struggle with, or things that felt really smooth just due to the nature of you using that engine?
I'd say anything that is that requires like pixel perfect calculation using sprite art. GameMaker is extremely well suited to that and very performant, especially on consoles like the Switch that are like performant limited. I feel like GameMaker is a very, very good choice for that. Where else was I going with that? Some of the disadvantages, I'd say mainly it's 3D.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems very obvious. And yes, there's a lot of Game Maker diehards that will tell you 3D is possible, and it is. I mean, it is absolutely possible. You have to do your own matrix projection and lots of other low level graphics things that no other engine makes you do.
Yeah,
and it's possible. But it's not ideal,
right?
But so it's very much a use case of two dimensional games. Sprite art specifically, it does support spline animation and things like that. But every developer that I've talked to that also works in Game Maker, we're all primarily making pixel art based games. That seems to be its. I got the opportunity to speak to a lot of the people that you know work at GameMaker and lead GameMaker at PAX this past couple of weeks.
Cool.
Super happy to talk to them, and they shared like a roadmap of the future, and they are really, really much more than I could have ever imagined as a 12-year-old. the features that they're adding and things like that. It's very exciting. Like they are going to support. I don't know if I should talk about that, but they're going to support a lot of things that other engines do very soon. I really like their pricing structure. Mm-hmm. It used to be very expensive to do console ports, but now it is to do enterprise, which once you're like an approved console developer on each platform, it's $80 USD a month per seat.
I feel like that's changed from even when I was looking into it, like a year or so.
Yes, it used to be. Okay. Yes, I'd say disadvantages. Yeah. Sometimes the pricing structure can change a lot. I got grandfathered into a really old license. I mean, I still have to pay for enterprise for console development, but I've been with them for a long time at this point. So, but yes, that I'd say that's a disadvantage over some of the more like. Free alternatives, like I was talking about Godot, which is rapidly gaining a lot of popularity, both for a lot of its similarities to Unity and a lot of the way that it like approaches a lot of those sort of paradigms. But it's free, right? So you can't beat free, except when you have to do commercial projects, I guess. You have to do some things that require it to not be so free. Yeah. But
well, one-to-one, Game Maker is and you can give me further details, but it is free to ship PC games, right?
Yes.
And that's some license terms about downloads maybe or sales.
At least perhaps. When I used it way back when, like it wasn't that long ago. It was only like a year and a half. But when I used it then, you had to pay like $5 a week or something to get access to making PC builds. It's kind of weird, but I guess that's changed. It's something that's changed since last.
Yes.
It's kind of funny because it seems like they have a healthy grandfathering clause. And so I guess listeners just need to go to their website and get all the details.
Right.
but the reason I brought it up is because with Godot, the last time I looked into it, the console porting is not free. It's like a one-time license fee. It's pretty pricey, so it's not that valuable if you're like a single seat developer. Like the does not compare very well. Now that may change. It may be negotiable because you don't negotiate with Godot. You negotiate with W4 Games, which produces those versions of Godot as an open source ecosystem. That's kind of the right way to do it. But yeah, it's not quite the same as just having it full and open. Now, I spoke to some of the Godot people at GDC, and we didn't talk about this in any of our GDC episodes, so I think this is news for listeners, at least from us. Sorry to just interrupt this episode with other content, but I spoke to some folks at the W4 people, and they were saying that basically their intent is, should these SDKs that are they have to basically charge because it's a license structure and they have obligations, and it's this very silly idea. We've complained about it on the show before how like Nintendo's secrets are not worth keeping. They're just not that interesting. Yeah. Once you learn them, you're like, oh, okay, whatever. But in the future, should that ever change? Should those become more open SDKs? Which isn't to say you could ship a game, but that you could at least see the code. Mm-hmm. In that instance, W4 is pretty committed to rolling that into Godot. So one day that could be free, you know, support and other features may still be, you know, they still may charge for. But as it stands, there really isn't a very, you know, cheap way to do any of these smaller engines. Unreal and Unity, you will get that stuff for free from those creator or from those engine makers, but they pay for it.
Yeah.
So it's part of their ecosystem play, and that's why with the smaller engines you tend to get the sticker shock a little bit, because you're like, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. When I was doing a Unity project, I just got a key from Nintendo for the Unity plugin or whatever that Unity makes. It's like somebody's paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just have a sort of a bulk deal going. Maybe one day that's something that Game Maker can do as well to amortize that cost. Tangent over. Continue.
No, that was very insightful. Thank you.
So yeah, so pricing is a disadvantage. It seems like it changes maybe on a dime, but it does. The impression I got from using Game Maker and reading about like how Game Maker works and stuff is that the people who are working on Game Maker are pretty active. They talk to the community quite a bit.
Yes,
which is refreshing.
It's a very
coming from Unity.
Yes, it's a very small team. I was able to meet a lot of them in Boston, which is impressive when you see their massive GitHub backlog and how much work that they have to do. It is very impressive.
Yeah,
because they use that for bug tickets now, and they didn't used to. And and like the head of Game Maker, he told me, he's like, well, we've always done this much work. It's just now you can see it.
Right.
It's visible. But
cool. Yeah.
But yes, I'd say it's an advantage. I'd say like the final advantage, I mean, every engine's going to say this, is that it's just so easy to learn, as in very, very, very easy, because even if you don't want to go the code route, like especially I think for younger people who want to just kind of like play around and see like how like a game is made, like just from the very basic level, you can do that with like their drag and drop system. And I haven't used it in a long time, so I assume it still works as well as it did. You can convert that to their code when you're done. Like you can like convert the drag and drop like stuff to actual GML code.
Hmm.
So you can kind of make that next step once you're like comfortable with it. They have a lot of tutorials. I'd say Unity probably still has the very best, like, you know, like that Unity Learn site that they do. It's probably still the best, but considering just how much smaller Game Maker is, I think that they do a pretty good job. I think they are starting to become aware of like the legacy support. There's a lot of people like me who grew up making Game Maker games, and now we're doing it commercially and professionally. And I think that they're starting to like, we need to like flaunt this a little more, you know, like this is sort of becoming a bigger deal than it used to be. I'd say the main weaknesses are just 3D and, you know, it's not going to be suited to everybody's tastes. If you want something that you can really dig into at like a deeper level, like you mentioned, and I always say it wrong, Godot, right? That's open source, right? So you can like, you can modify that if you need to solve a problem. Like you don't need to wait on somebody to fix the runtime for Game Maker or anything like that. Like you have more access, like deeper access. And I think Unreal, it's not open source, but you know, engines like that, you can really like sort of delve deeper, and it's not as surface level. But Game Makers, they're working on that.
Okay.
They are, and they've like I said, they've got a lot of really, I don't want to sound like I'm like the Game Maker ambassador or anything.
I mean, today you are.
They don't pay me.
Yeah.
But they are. They have a lot of really exciting things planned in the future for the engine, and I can see, especially if they continue to commit to, you know, there's no rev share at all, right? Like you just pay for the license and go. Like I can see that if as long as they stick to those terms, which they seem, especially after the Unity debacle last year, I can see them really becoming successful off that, assuming that the games that people want to make sort of fit the scope mm-hmm. of, you know, like a 2D game. So yeah.
It's interesting because yeah, yeah. you said that one of the big reasons that you chose Game Maker for RZ was because you were familiar with it. But, you know, the fact that you have been working in it for a while and have stuck with it and still felt that, you know, it was the right tool, that's a pretty big endorsement. I know that you're not officially endorsed by Game Maker.
they like me, so
that's cool.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So the sort of roadmap that you're excited about. I'm assuming you didn't sign an NDA. You're just essentially you don't want to tell tales out of school is what this is.
Right. Yeah. I have signed so many NDAs. Yes.
Can you characterize, or at least between these options, like mm-hmm. if I'm Game Maker, there's a couple of things that are valuable to me, right? There's the webpage, their homepage is pretty much, you know, the message is very clear. Like this is where you start, right?
Right.
But it still will work for professionals, right? Uh-huh. They want to have that message of like it's a place where you can grow, and your story really kind of mimics it. I mean, it makes sense why you're sort of feeling mistaken for the Game Maker ambassador because it yeah. seems like the right yeah. Exactly the kind of person they want to promote is like that could be you. So if I'm Game Maker, I could lean into that, right? Mm-hmm. I could say, okay, let's improve that first run experience. Let's make sure that someone who's never touched a game development tool is really, really welcome. And let's make sure that when they're working in it, that they can then slowly work their way up. But at the same time, if I'm Game Maker, I'm also like, and Unity was in this situation maybe 10 years ago, like people are making professional games with this. We should probably start shipping proper professional stuff. And that might include things like 3D, or that might include versions of the editor, which basically strip away all the stuff that you as a veteran don't need anymore, rather than having you click past it or whatever. I'm being general because I'm not as familiar.
Sure.
But can you characterize what their attitude is with regard to the roadmap of like where they're going? Is it really about like making it really robust and making that path from beginner to professional, that runway longer so you can go further? Or is it really about like being competitive in the space with Godot and Unity and Unreal?
I think it's a bad answer, but it's kind of a mix of both.
Sure, sure.
Because they certainly have that, like you said, that beginner to professional like runway. I think that's totally figured out on their end. I think that's mm-hmm. one of their huge selling points, because it's true, you know, it is. It's super approachable, but then as you ramp up, you can start doing more advanced things. But they do want to be more competitive, and that includes adding like, well, they have announced that they are doing like a new runtime, right? It's going to be called the Game Maker Runtime. Right now it's pretty much been the same since 2017 or so. They've had major changes in how they structure their releases, but they even have like a LTS just like how Unity does. Like they have those things, but they are working towards having a really low level like Game Maker runtime. And I'm very positive that they've talked about how they do want to have for enterprise customers give them open source access to their runtime. Like they want to do all these things that really, and I'm not sure if I can talk about all those things, because again, no NDA, but just it was one of those like, hey, we know you're like a power user. Here's some of the stuff to expect in the next upcoming months. And it is really exciting things. Like no robust 3D support or anything, but just from somebody who, you know, wants to use it professionally, there's lots of really like exciting additions.
Sure.
That's certainly, I'd say, maybe leans more towards the become competitive with other engines. Maybe continue to draw some of the developers who are stuck in Unity's ecosystem, especially if all they're doing is 2D work, really kind of draw them over. I really think they're going to start making more moves in that arena.
Right. And I could certainly see as someone who is invested in the Game Maker ecosystem being perhaps relieved that they're not leaning into 3D stuff, right? Like it is what it is, and that's right. and that's makes it a little more focused. I could also see someone being like, "Oh, I really wish they'd add some stuff so we could do those things." But you know, it's a choice you make, right? When you shepherd a big project like this. It's interesting you talk about the sort of like low level functionality and open sourcing the, you know, or at least open access the source to the or to the editor for enterprise users.
Guys, I like it when our listeners connect with us.
Yeah.
And when people post things on Discord, it makes me think, it makes me laugh, and I like doing those things.
It's true. It makes me both think and
laugh. So the pitch here is, for Ellen's sake, if for no other reason, please join us on the Discord.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is the pitch, actually.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to make Ellen unhappy. That would not be... I mean, come on.
Hey.
You don't want to be responsible for that. Join the Discord.
To be fair, though, I do think that the things that our listeners post on our Discord and other social media avenues also makes other listeners who are there think and laugh.
Yes.
That's true. The benefit could be provided to more than just Ellen.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it could be to other listeners. In fact, even you yourself could benefit from the participation.
It's true.
I would guess.
It's an interesting theory. We should test that out. We should have listeners go on in the Discord and post some things.
How might they do that, Stephen?
You can go to nicegames.club/Discord, join the Discord server, and chat with us on our channel there.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I want to hear more about GML and about that language, because I think one of the things that Godot is going through in particular is they are, and they're getting some money from Microsoft to do this, is they're trying to make their C# functionality more robust, because of the language it can do more and it has access to, you know, the .NET APIs and all that stuff. And again, it's a choice you make when you shepherd these things. It's like, this is our language. So I'm curious about the capabilities of the language and what its limits are, because, if I'm designing that language, I would actually put some limits on it to make it simple and easy to approach. So what's it like to code in GML?
It's like I said, it's extremely, extremely easy. It's very, it's very C-like. It has a few Java inspirations, but I'd say the best way I can summarize it is your accessors. Like when you, like I'm trying to think of like a really basic example. When you, like, if you tell GameMaker this equals this, like if you say if you do a conditional, like you want it to be 3, you don't have to double type the equals sign. You can do it once. Like it allows for extreme levels of like you don't have to semicolon out your code, right? Like,
wait, you don't? It allows,
oh, it's conditional,
right?
I did that out of habit. I didn't even know.
Right. Like, though, yes, it's extremely forgiving.
Okay.
Maybe too much so, which they actually are shipping a new code editor.
Oh.
I mean, obviously, I think you can just hook into Visual Studio like everything else, which, you know, a lot of people I know do. But they have a new, like, built-in code editor, I think, to try to curtail some of these things, because That's something that I certainly struggled with, and I'm still not the world's best programmer, but that's something I certainly struggled with when I was making the transition to doing more professional work, was to sort of like have standard reading code, because right now GameMaker has two runtimes. Basically, when you like export a package, it has what's called virtual machine, which interprets it directly into like, you know, a virtual machine, and performance is fine. A lot of GameMaker games ship like this, even commercially. And then there is another one that is lower level that uses .NET to sort of like translate it to the machine code and the target system. And when you're doing that, that's when you that's when all those fun little code mistakes that, you know, the virtual machine allows, it doesn't like a lot of those. It'll start yelling at you, and maybe or it'll work, but then your game won't work the way that, wait a minute, it worked just fine in this other runtime. Why won't it run in the lower level one? And that's something that they're trying to, because you obviously want to do the lower level one because the performance is much, much better, especially on hardware constrained systems like Switch, right? But that's something that they are aware of. And like, that's what the new runtime, as they say, combines in both, or it gets rid of the virtual machine, basically. They're trying to work towards it to being more like Unity, where there's just, you know, the runtime, right, that you get with your release, right. And it just works cross like platform. I don't know how many of the people who use GameMaker will transition from hobbyist to professional. When you're making a hobbyist project, you don't care about what sort of runtime you're using unless you're one of those power users. So, you know, it allows you to make like, I don't want to say sloppy, but, you know, like it allows you to make more mistakes that sort of don't get called out, which makes it super friendly, like I said, to beginners. But when you start wanting to do things that are more in depth, that's when it becomes a problem. But yeah, I would say the GML is great. It's a scripting language, you know, it's not a true programming language. It's really good for beginners, but it I think maybe they're going to have to try to clamp down on some of that sooner than later, at least maybe like they have a IntelliSense like thing that they're doing with the newer code editor and some of the earlier releases, where it's sort of gently prods you and it's like, hey, maybe do this, or maybe wrap your code like this, you know. So I think they're probably going to lean into that. I'll give you a great example on one of my hobbyist projects that I was working on, the remasters, right? So there's a function where you're supposed to tell it true or false, right? Like it deactivates thing. That's what the function does, because there's a bunch of functions built into GameMaker. It expected true or false, but I didn't know what I was doing really, and so I just put the object's name, which is sort of what GameMaker doesn't have prefabs like Unity does, but it has, it's sort of like a similar concept where there's like an object that you put all your like things on. Anyway, I would just put the object name in to the function, and GameMaker read just text as just, true. So, you know, I thought I was doing it correctly, which, you know, maybe more on me, not for reading the documentation. Right, but you know, somebody pointed that out to me when they were looking through the code, and they're like, "Hey, you're supposed to declare this one way or the other. This isn't, you don't just put the name in." But GameMaker was like, "Oh, there's text. Yeah, it's true." So like, it's that forgiving. Yeah. It really is. Like,
that can be very dangerous.
Yes, it can be very dangerous.
Yeah. Like, yeah, like if you're using that lower level method publishing the game, then like you'll I suppose beginners who are trying to get into a higher level of, and they want to start using that, are kind of going to be in for a rude awakening. I suppose that's kind of the case with any engine, though. It's not necessarily unique to GameMaker in that way, but
yeah, familiar for anybody who, you know, uses JavaScript. Yeah. And then anything else?
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. You got to follow rules?
Right. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think just to sort of round that out. I certainly think that the documentation does a very good job of teaching you programming mm-hmm. concepts. Like it's been rewritten several times, but GameMaker's documentation is pretty good. It always gives you like an example at the bottom of what to do after you read like the general concept. But I think like I'm self-taught. I've been doing it since I was a kid.
Right? A wee tween.
Of course, I'm going to make a ton of mistakes, right? But I think that especially if you're starting out now and you follow like Sean Spalding's tutorials on YouTube, they have a lot of really excellent tutorials. Or you follow a lot of these like big name tutorials, or just read the documentation, you're going to be less primed to make those sort of mistakes.
Yeah. It is interesting that the parallels between sort of what you're describing, those like and some of the other process engines and workflows I'm familiar with, Unity in particular, there's Mono versus IL2 CPP, right? Mm-hmm. That's a very similar, it may not be exactly, but you're describing it in a way that's very similar in that sense, where it's the runtime versus it compiles down, mm-hmm. right? And for a long time, those things live side by side because they weren't compatible, right? Because projects wouldn't be good for one or the other. I think that's less so these days, but that's the same kind of process that you got to go through, right? It seems like the problems that arise are slightly of a different character, but that's the process of an engine evolving, I suppose.
Right.
It's finding new ways to do it without necessarily breaking everybody's code, yeah. like at least every part of everybody's code, right? You know, Unity did do that when they depreciated the JavaScript-based Unity script. Mm. It had its own scripting language years ago, right?
Yeah.
That was before my time with it. For a while, they said to support both because people were using it. And then they just, you know, they had to pull the rug eventually. It seems like it's a hard challenge for any project. Sounds like they're managing all of that okay, though.
Oh, yeah. I think GameMaker's handling it very well. I do think that they will make that change to supporting like more standard, like C#, which is basically like yeah. industry standard at this point. I certainly think that they're probably going to make that change or at least add like direct support. Mm-hmm. I think because GML, like as a scripting language, has been around since GameMaker 1 in 1999. So there are like a lot of people who are very, very familiar with it. But, again, I'm not like an expert on all languages, but it's certainly once you learn the concepts of it, it's very easy to sort of transition to any C-based language. You just sort of have to wrap your head around it, right?
Yeah.
GameMaker takes care of a lot of things for you that you don't normally have to think about.
Yeah, that's a refrain that we've heard a lot from guests and from our own experiences, which is like it is all pretty much the same.
Yeah.
No, I do keep forgetting about the legacy of GameMaker. It's mm-hmm. been around for, well, you said 1999, 25 years.
25 years.
That's yep. wild to me. I yeah. guess just thinking about like, I think like Unreal, I want to say Unreal has been around that long, but it hasn't been publicly accessible for nearly that long.
Yeah.
So I think it's really interesting that like GameMaker has been public and available for people for that long a period of time. And that legacy exists. So like there's just I imagine there's such a built up community around this engine that like you certainly anybody knew who was coming into the engine would feel well supported because there's just so much that they can know. Though I imagine the engine has changed so much as well that all of that, you know, all of that information that people had 15 years ago, a lot of that is out of date and probably won't be very helpful. But some of those properties probably persisted throughout.
Oh yeah,
And you had said that you've been working in GameMaker since since you were a child. So I'm actually curious, like, do you feel like the progression of GameMaker, how that progression has like gone? Like, I guess like the specifics about like
I have a way to rephrase your question. I think driving at what I think you're getting at.
Yeah.
Let me know if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. The question I think you're asking is, as GameMaker became more powerful and more evolved. How much is that responsible for your development as a game designer mm-hmm. versus in a vacuum, if you were still using GameMaker 1 or whichever, or 7, whichever one you started with, your natural improvement through experience, how much would you describe, like what percentage would you give each of those qualities for your development? Is that close to what you're getting at, Stephen?
Yeah,
I'm also not quite getting there 100%. But
it's kind of hard, right?
That's a really, really good question. I would say it's 50-50 because okay. In a lot of ways, I feel like the engine did grow with mm-hmm. me as just a hobbyist developer who did it on the side. Just to sort of give some quick history, I'd say version 6, which I think was like came out in like 2003, 2004. I think that's when it started getting really popular. I think its closest like rival at the time is like Clickteam, which to this day, like I think it has a lot of it had a lot of similarities with Clickteam Fusion, and it had the user interface was very, very similar for a long time. It didn't have like the dockable windows or anything like that it has now, and it stayed very similar up until Game Maker Studio, which was the version after 8. And 8.1 was like one of the big ones. That's when we started seeing games like Hotline Miami being made with it. And of course, back then, the console ports had to be totally redone from scratch in another engine because there is no way to port those. But like I'd say 8.1 is when it started. That's when I purchased my license for the first time. I remember, I think it was $50 back then. More or less, like I paid a $60 fee to upgrade to Studio 2, but that's kind of getting ahead of myself. But, anyway, Game Maker Studio, which is what like Undertale is built on, mm-hmm. Was when they started to make a concerted effort, because 8.1 was when they got bought out. Was when Mark Overmars, who was the original developer and kind of creator of Game Maker, Games got involved, who still is the company behind it. It's just they're owned by Opera now. But that's when they got involved, and that's when they started making the moves to sort of make it a more, again, less of a hobbyist engine and more of something geared towards professional game development. And that's when they started really like marketing the let's take you from beginner to professional was like around that time was in Game Maker Studio. And I don't remember, I think that there were console ports near the tail end of Game Maker Studio, but the best part was back then when it was Studio 1, the UI was still extremely similar to like all the versions that preceded it. Game Maker fans know exactly what I'm talking about, and it was still very possible to import some of those old projects. It would go through like a converter and try to translate it, but it was starting to really show its age back then, because that's when I started with making the Zelda CDI remasters. There weren't layers. weren't like tile layers or anything like that.
Goodness.
And there's a lot of things like that that just were not present. And again, the no dockable windows. So when Studio 2 came along, that was a huge step forward. That's when they really were like, you know, we're going to put in an effort to sort of really grow and become like a professional tool set. And sort of like what you were asking, I have stuck with Game Maker if that didn't happen. That's really, I mean, honestly, no, I don't think I would have. I think I probably would have continued sort of going towards Unity. Because again,
like, sure,
I know enough about Unity, but that I don't really have a use case for it right now. But Studio 2 is when, you know, that's when we saw a lot of console support. That's when they started really, really getting serious about adding lots of console support, especially Switch. That was huge for Game Maker, because just the sort of games that typically get made with it are usually a really good fit for that platform. I'd say that's when they started really blowing up, and I think that's sort of what led to the Opera acquisition, and now they're becoming huge. But I'd say to get more back into your question, I'd say they grew with me.
Yeah.
But you know, they by adding like features that were becoming standard with other engines, you know, that sort of helped me become ready to be more professional, I guess, mm-hmm. is like the most basic way I can put it. Like it wasn't as hard for me to sort of go back and learn some more about Unity than it would have been if they had stuck with sort of their very basic unchanged layout the way that they were. It has actually been, now that I'm like really thinking about it, thanks to this podcast, it's really been amazing journey to see them go from, because, you know, that didn't happen to Click Team Fusion. Mm-hmm. Like, I know games, right. I know games are still being made with that, but I know a lot of developers went from that to Game Maker just because, just more like support and obviously the console opportunity.
Right.
But yeah, it's just, it's really been kind of eye opening to see them go to that. And I think that they're poised to do a lot of other really exciting things. So I'm excited to see it.
Cool. So I have a question to get more into the nitty gritty of Game Maker.
Sure.
When I was using it before, I had a difficult time structuring my project, okay. like all of the different scripts, mm-hmm. all the different objects, and how to use the different scripts, and like using scripts on the object versus using having a separate script.
Right.
I'm really curious, like, how you even begin to approach that, and what like things you tend to do to make it easier on yourself during your working process.
So that's a pattern is just very familiar to me. So that's why it doesn't.
Okay.
That's why it doesn't feel as foreign, because especially when and I will say, Game Maker, I'd say 2.5, 3. I don't remember when they did it. They added support for basically you have one GML script, right?
Yeah.
But you can put different functions on it now. Like, so you can have like one big, like, so they've certainly, it's not just you having to spam it, I guess is a good way you could say it.
Sure.
You don't have to have like 500 different scripts to accomplish the same thing, like, you know, a handful would do. It's just, it's again, sort of stepping back to familiarity and just wrapping my head around how it works. Every Game Maker project that I've worked on, and it's sort of like a meme within the community, is, yes, we all have object controller, you know, like that's persistent through the whole game, that sets up all the global variables, runs your main like update, like it's everybody has it. So sometimes it's O_control, sometimes it's, mine's always object controller because it's just, you know, old habits. Mm-hmm. But knowing like that's how Game Maker works is just really, mm-hmm. I know it's not a great answer to someone who wants to get into it switching from something else, but I will say that they're taking steps to sort of make that a little friendlier than having a million scripts for every single thing that you needed to do.
Okay. Yeah, because I think I'm not gonna confuse, because I know there's a ton of different scripts, and then there were also like events you could have attached to objects, and those, there are a bunch of different types of events you can add and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I first approached it, I just understood how events worked and didn't realize that the scripting thing, making new scripts was a thing you could do. So like my code was kind of scattered all over the place, mm-hmm. as I learned mm-hmm. more about the things. I guess this is how everybody's first project happens. But like,
right.
but I guess I found myself a little confused as to how I was supposed to go about it. But I think, hearing how you're describing it and saying that like everybody kind of fumbles around with it until they find something that works best for them, it's probably the best way to go about it. I think that makes a lot of sense.
It is a game engine still.
Yes, it is, in fact.
It may be relatively easy to learn.
Unfortunately.
With great documentation, it is still a game engine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep, at the end of the day.
Yeah. So like events, the different events pull off different things and you attach the scripts to them. But if you were doing drag and drop, instead of it being a bespoke script, it would be like they look like blocks, and they have like if this, execute this, and then it then do this, which again makes it really easy to visualize for like beginners, rather than just seeing a bunch of code in front of their faces and they have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
But I forgot what they're called in Unity. Gizmos? Like when you pull up like a prefab, the best comparison to sort of like the object events that you were talking about. Like how you attach like a script to like the billion bars and things that are in Unity.
Yeah.
But it's very...
Yeah.
It's like a very, very simplified version of that.
When I did work in Game Maker, I did explore a little bit about like different third-party assets and things. Mm-hmm. I wish I had done a little bit more about that, because a little bit more exploring into that, because I felt like there are a lot of things there that could potentially be powerful and would have helped me make the games that I was trying to make at the time. I'm curious your experiences with that. Just the Game Maker ecosystem with respect to like all the different third-party assets you can grab
Yeah, so that's another great like difference between other engines. Like we were talking about sort of the pros and cons. I would say another huge strength of both Unity and Unreal is the asset store, right?
Yeah.
And GameMaker has that, but it is just nowhere near the breadth and depth of those stores. That's certainly something that it's just there's really no comparison. But there are a lot of really good tools. I do use a few extensions for my projects. Typically, I have a Steamworks extension. Yeah. But I'd say like there's an input library that I use like for all my games. Maintained by I don't think Juju Adams works on it anymore, but yes.
There was somebody else Scatterbox, does. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I use that. It was very helpful to have that.
But yes, there's a lot of really good libraries from those folks. It's a very small group of people. Yellow Afterlife. Juju Adams, like it's a very small pool of people that are just really passionately like making sort of like these libraries and add-ons for GameMaker, and they have a really close connection to GameMaker's team.
Yeah,
and that's why a lot of the things that were extensions sometimes like they're not the same thing, but they will, or sometimes they are. Some of the built-in shaders, they're called effects in GameMaker. Mm. That's something that they added recently. So now you can sort of just drag and drop a shader, which is
which makes
a lot of things very cool. Yeah, some of those really are just from the community with proper like sourcing and stuff. You'll see a lot of those things start to make their way into the engine proper because of that sort of close connection.
Mm.
Sure,
I will say that the community is another really great thing. I don't know if it's better than Unity or worse than Unity, because I'd say it's probably the closest cousin to GameMaker at this point, especially if you're doing 2D development. Is definitely Unity.
Yeah,
that's like that. You're handed the two pills, and that's the one you have to take if you're not going to make your own engine, or you're not going to go open source, or at least it was a few years ago, right? You're gonna use Unity or you're gonna use GameMaker, and I'd say the community for both is really good.
Right.
Everybody is very willing to help. You know, so I don't know if it's as much of a problem with Unity. I haven't spent enough time in the community, but unfortunately there does seem to be a bit of a habit or a joke of people just being like, "Can you just give me code?" like when they start asking like some questions, but they'll be like, "Well, could you just give me like a code block, please?" And
instead of learning how to do it themselves,
right? Sure. So that's that. But that kind of goes with a lot of like sort of the amateur beginnings of that GameMaker sort of like fosters as well. But
yeah.
The add-ons are good. They do support extensions like DLL extensions really well. I don't use a lot of them personally. They allow like extension development for most of the console platforms, so like they do allow like a lot of like that's very very helpful for specific use cases. But I'd say for RZ specifically, I'm lucky in the fact that I'd say one of my strengths as a developer is I know like my limits. I know my limitations. Mm. I know what I can and I can't do. And I sort of know how to scope a project around that.
Yeah.
I didn't want to use a whole lot of external thing, like external add-ons or extensions other than, like I said, like I use an input library, which is just invaluable because it can be tricky to do gamepad support in GameMaker sometimes. It's getting much better. But with that add-on, it becomes like, or library, it becomes just effortless. But for me personally, I wanted to make it so that almost everything could be done in GameMaker. And that sort of brings me back to the video thing that I was talking about earlier in the episode. So RZ uses lots of videos. When I started scoping the project out and designing and writing everything out, GameMaker did not support videos. But there was a couple options. I could brute force it and make it an animated sprite. So like the world's most rudimentary AVI and synced up to audio. I could do that. Mm-hmm. But more realistically, there was an add-on. There was an extension that had video support. And for a long time, if you wanted to do videos in GameMaker, that is what you had to do. You had to use an add-on from the marketplace.
Sure.
And some of these are like in proprietary formats, and that's the one I was going to use because it was cross-platform. It was a mess, not ideal. But I was stubborn, and I wanted to use GameMaker for this due to familiarity. Yeah. And at the time, I thought that, well, I was like, well, there'll be video, but there won't be that much. There's over 45 minutes of animation in the final game, so there's a lot. There's a lot of video. But I found out that ever since the Switch export was added to GameMaker, video support was always available to that platform. Mm. So that had me thinking. I was like, well, why isn't it just on all platforms? And I guess they asked themselves the same question, and about a year into the project, which was before full production, thankfully, they added full video support. Uh-huh. Which was fantastic because it's truly cross-play. It uses all the video libraries on all the different consoles and everything. So it's exactly what you want.
Yeah,
I know that Unity, because I'll kind of getting ahead of myself, but there are a lot of problems with the video playback in GameMaker for a while. And I did a lot of troubleshooting. And when you troubleshoot it, you end up with a lot of Unity search results instead of GameMaker. But I know that I know that it will convert videos for you if you're using like Video Player on Unity and everything. Mm-hmm. GameMaker does no such thing. It pretty much just pulls the video file and plays it, and it draws it to a surface that you have to manipulate yourself.
I see.
Hopefully I'll be able to write up a technical thing about it soon. Mm. I hope so, because no other game maker I sort of pioneered a lot of the video in game maker. No other game uses this much video, at least right now. Yeah. Than RZ. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of problems. I'm sure they got very tired of me filing my GitHub bug reports and also my private sort of tickets for consoles and stuff, and be like, hey, it crashes. It doesn't work. It crashes. It doesn't. because there were a lot of problems, and that was a huge source of frustration, because RZ is very much a lot of it depends on video playback and cutscenes, right? Because that's part of the deal. And another part of the deal was they had to be blue screened videos because of the way that the original games were. It was animation, but with no background. The background was the game background. And, cross-platform doesn't support transparent videos, right? It doesn't support like ProRes or anything crazy like that. That would be insane anyway. Imagine shipping a game that had ProRes video files. It'd be like 300 gigabytes. But I had to make a shader that did it itself in GameMaker. I know in Unity there's a chroma key built in, but no such luxury in GameMaker. So yeah,
you might be giving Unity's video playback a little too much credit.
I know. Well, based on some of the technical forum results I got, maybe. Yeah. But yeah.
I mean, more people have traveled that gauntlet, perhaps, and come out on the other side. But it's still a gauntlet.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Game development's a gauntlet, right?
Well, that's true.
So that was that's sort of my video story. It was not built to have this level of... Obviously, they added it so you could have your cute studio introduction at the beginning or anything else like that. They didn't expect the player to be playing like dozens, if not 100 video files in one play session. So. Yeah. That was a bit of a challenge to work through, but it shipped. Yeah. So I'm very happy with it.
Cool.
And just that act of faith of saying like, well, I'm gonna make an FMV game in a platform that doesn't support video because I think I could probably do it. And then just you had a couple of options, and some were maybe not perfect, but like you saw yourself traveling that road, and then more options opened up to you and you found one that worked a little bit better. But like, just from the way you describe it, I feel like if you had to individually encode every frame and compress every frame just to make the size reasonable, I could see you'd accomplishing that. And, but it looks like what you did do instead is like you had the ear of the project maintainers. And, I don't know how much credit you gave yourself for this, but it sounds like maybe you had some impact on, and a future cohort of GameMaker developers. Yeah. Thank you.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how much they like me because of that, but
I'm sure they like you.
And I will. Yes, they do. They're very nice people. But I will say, and I talked about this publicly around the time of the, I'll just call it the Unity debacle. I did consider switching many times because it is very frustrating. Like, it was very frustrating for the blue screen thing in particular, because my solution needed to be pixel perfect, which is extremely difficult to pull off with video files.
Yeah.
And just, I eventually was just stubborn enough to stick through it and just, and use what I was familiar with because, you know, switching engines, that's, gosh, that's a lot. But there was a point where I did seriously consider it just for those reasons and more. So yeah.
Okay. So we've learned all about what to do, what not to do, why to do it, why maybe not to. And I think people will have their own reasons on why they want to work with GameMaker, whether they're switching or they're just starting out. What would be maybe the first bit of advice, the sort of maybe broadest message you can give to somebody who is getting started in GameMaker, wherever they're coming from?
Don't be afraid to make as many games as you need and as many small games as you need. I'd say one of GameMaker's really big strengths is the speed of prototyping and getting something running on the screen. Be that using one of their templates that they provide or just starting from scratch. It takes very little time to get a rudimentary concept prototyped and up and running. And I know for a lot of people, and it was for me, just seeing something that you made like running and being able to, like, to control it, play it, is it's a powerful feeling. So don't be afraid to, once you've done that, to just start again and do something else, because I'd say the speed of prototyping and just iteration in GameMaker is extremely fast. And yeah, just do it, you know, just read the tutorials, you know, watch some on YouTube, use one of their sample projects and just sort of get your feet wet. Don't be afraid to mess up, because GameMaker is forgiving and you can just do it again if you screwed up somewhere.
Cool.
Hey, Seth.
Hi.
We cut out the really awkward transition into this part of it, but can you talk about our Zet for a couple of minutes? Because it's really pretty and it's got great reviews.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Arzette, the Jewel of Faramore, is a spiritual successor to a pair of infamous fantasy adventure games from the early 90s and sort of that era of CD-ROM FMV entertainment. As for why it exists, because the games that inspired Arzette are considered bad, I think every game has its story and there are reasons why it's bad, and more bad games should be given space to maybe be good, given the opportunity to be good. So Arzette is a 2D action platformer where you control Arzette in her quest to restore the Jewel of Faramore. You beat a bunch of baddies. You do a lot of exploring, some light backtracking. There's a lot of backtracking, but, you know. And yeah, all of the backgrounds are fully hand-painted. Each one, just sort of to give a very, very brief way that those exist. I would design levels, I would gray box them, I would then illustrate a sketch, I would then give that sketch based on the gray box to a painter, and they would paint it. So they are all individual paintings, which is not the ideal way to make a video game, but it is a way, and it looks very nice and very authentic to the times.
Yes.
But it also has a ton of cartoon cutscenes, 45 minutes of animation, done in a familiar and beloved style by fans of said style. And yeah, it has been getting very good reviews, both on Steam, and it's sitting at 77, 78 Metacritic, which I am extremely pleased with, because Arzette at its core is niche and esoteric. It is very much leans into its retro inspirations while still trying to modernize parts to appeal to, you know, a wider player base other than the truly, truly hardcore. So the fact that it ended up that high, I'm very happy with. I have a lot of fans somehow. They really like the game. And yeah, I'm very pleased with it. I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't mention who I work with. I worked with Limited Run Games. They published the game. as part of their initiative to do more LRG originals, which is basically the stuff that nobody else would do. Because let's be honest, you go into a publisher with the pitch, this is the Zelda CDI spiritual successor. They'd be like, would you please leave? I don't want to see you in here. Are you okay? They Josh Fairhurst, the CEO, during our pitch, he saw what the game would be, to his credit, I'd say even more than I did. And he was like, yeah, let's do this. And so, yeah, they've been an amazing partner to work with. They did a physical version and everything else, which we recently stopped selling, which holding a physical version of your own game is an incredible feeling. I was produced by Audie Surley. He co-wrote the game with me. He's been around the games industry for a long time, and he's also my producer. I worked with a ton of really talented artists and animators to bring our set to life, and I'm really proud of it. It is a product of love, earnest love, because there's not a lot of people, I think, who want to give this sort of game a chance. Again, like I mentioned, I see a lot of both potential and just the story behind games that are considered bad. And I think there's something interesting there. And I thought there was. And that's sort of why RZ exists the way that it does.
That's beautiful. I love that. I love that you want to look at an old game that every near universally considered bad and be like, why? Why do you feel this way? And revisiting that idea and concept of that and then trying to transform something into making it better and making it good. I think that's fantastic. Thank you for being on the show, and thank you for pitching your game, because you sold it to me. So I hope you look into that now.
It happened.
Yeah. Well, that Metacritic score, it's a marked improvement, but it seems like it might have rescued a genre from from the pits. See if it inspires anyone else. That really resonates with me, that idea of like something taking inspiration from something that wasn't fully well executed, because people then write it off forever. There's a project of mine that has a sort of a similar story, not quite as infamous as yours, but with a similar idea. Like let's stop being inspired by just the things that were successful, right? Because there's more ideas to be had and to pull from and to build on. And that's fantastic. Well done.
Thank you.
That's our show. You can find Seth online on his Linktree, The Dopster. That's The Dopster, which we will spell in the show notes and link it so you can go get it and find it. For those show notes and additional links from today's conversation, you can go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on social media at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and Reply on the various platforms or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. That's it for this week.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
All right. And also, thanks for putting up with the dog interruption.
Yeah, you handled that very smoothly. I did not expect my dog and my husband to come in. They were telling me pizza is ready, but that's for later.
That is an emergency announcement.
Okay, the dog didn't say that. The husband did. I'm not sure what the dog was really thinking. But that's okay.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Hyland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Hyland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at Hyland.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.